I guess today has been designing professionally for over 16 years and has worked with some of the major brands in the country. He's currently the creative director at TeamApt, where he works with a team of engineers and brand marketers to produce amazing design solutions. In his free time, he manages a community he co-founded of designers at Design Jobcaster. He also teaches design at Stuten and recently started his own design agency. I guess it's none other than the Commissioner of Good Design himself, Leslie Williams Issa.
Man,
it's good to hear
you. Thank you very much. Thank you for this. Yeah, well, it's a lot better than seeing it being written or something.
Yeah.
Well, it's great being here. It's really great.
So, like, the truth is that I have so many questions that I want to ask you, because, like, 16 years of experience, that is like content. But
man, go ahead.
Place I want to start is here. A few weeks ago, you tweeted about wanting to be a comic book artist growing up. Was that like legit, or it was like one of those childhood ambitions?
It was a bit of both. So, when I was growing up, I was surrounded by people with various art backgrounds. My mom, until she retired, was a fine art teacher. I had uncles that were into painting. My late uncle was into painting. Well, he stopped and branched into business. I had uncles that were into painting. I had uncles that were in sculpture. So I was surrounded by art, you know, in various forms. So it was kind of like easy. It was kind of easy for me to actually get creative, so to speak. And then when I was a lot younger, I came across comics. I can't remember whether it was a Spider-Man comic or a Superman comic, but comics then weren't really accessible as they are right now. You know, they weren't really accessible. So if you like found like a page or two of comics, you would hide it. You would hold on to it, man, because that was treasure. And I loved the art of it. I loved the storytelling. I think it was comics that really helped open my imagination.
Mm.
You know, it was comics that really helped open my imagination. And I felt that maybe I could tell good stories, or at least, like, you know, maybe draw out really awesome action sequences. And I tried, you know, when you're in primary school, you try drawing like some action sequences, and they have the actor and they have the bulls, and then, you know, you start from stickman and go into like more advanced stances and stuff. I used to try to draw, although if I looking back right now, what I probably did was bad. But it was something that I wish I had the good. It was something I wish I could follow. I followed through, you know, real life. No, well, I won't call it like a total waste, because it's that knowledge, or it's that accumulated knowledge, that helped build my design taste. So
I completely agree. Like, it must have been one of the things that inspired you.
Yeah. Unfortunately, when I grew up and I discovered that, okay, it's not just about drawing, it's about telling compelling stories, I was like, it's not just story. And then I wrote like a bunch of stories, and I looked at it like 2 days later, like, this is trash. And so it was around that period I began to have a better appreciation for writers, and, you know, the amount of time that they tell, the amount of time that they take into like crafting, you know, good stories and world building character development and character arcs. And it's not just writing from your head. You have to do like lots of research. You have to talk to people. You have to read books. You have to be well versed in history. You need to understand people at a very deep psychological level, because if you don't, you probably end up writing like, you know, one dimensional characters who are just, you know, they just see
that aren't relatable.
Like, they are not relatable. They are not complex. They are not deep. They are just shallow. And the emotions that they probably have would just be weird and, you know, they'll be weird and unrelatable. So So I just pretty much gave up that dream. I also I gave up. You know, like when you're growing, you begin to like discard of certain things, and because look at it, that it's not yours, it's not for you. This isn't your path. I always had this vision, you know, not vision. I always had this dream that I was going to make like my own video games, and for a while that dream came true. I designed games, mobile games, for like a year for Maliu.
Wow.
and that video games. That was, I think that was 2015, 2016. So I did that for like a year while I was working at Intel. And it, for me, the Mario games gig wasn't so much about the money. It was just about me fulfilling that dream that, I design games. And it was fun. It was really fun. But when it came right down to you know, developing the games, it's okay. First of all, you have to draw the characters. You have to learn game level to, like, you know, develop stories for them. Stuff. It's God. It's so much work. And then when you're now developing, when you're now, like, you know, writing out the, you know, coding the engine and all that, your understanding of mathematics and physics has to be pristine. And at that point, I just shut down my laptop, uninstalled Unity, uninstalled Unreal, and I was like, you know what,
I'm not. Are you serious? On a whim, it was like one day.
Yeah, no, I wasn't doing it anymore. No, it wasn't that I stopped game design. I just said, no, I'm not, no. This is not for me, please. This is not for me.
I mean, like, because I think I'm curious to really hear about your journey, because so now you mentioned that you wanted to start at comic, you wanted to do comic books for a while, and you tried it, and you've mentioned that you did game design for a while. I know that you did branding for a while. I think you are also like a major figure in the Nigerian product design community.
Yeah.
And now you're a creative director and you're directing products, both branding and product design. So I'm curious to what that journey was like. Like, how did you move from, and you've mentioned some of it, but like, how did you move from comic book artist to creative director?
Oh, it was a long journey. There were lots of tears involved and broken hearts. All right. So where do I begin? From the beginning, obviously. Let me see. So do I go as far back as secondary school when I had my first concrete interaction with like a computer? And I had this tenant back then who was using Corel Draw at the time. This was as far back as 1999.
Wow.
1999, 2000-ish, I think. Yeah. So what then happened? I was in secondary school back then, so I summoned up the courage and I walked up to him and I said, look, I want to learn this thing that, you know, that you're doing. And laughed, like, ha, 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 ha. Hey, look, like, what do you know? I was like, look, teach me your man or kick me out, but I want to learn. I was like, okay. And then instead of opening Corel Draw for me and going through the nightmare, the stress and trouble of teaching me Corel, he opens MS Paint. Mm. And boy, did I do wonders with MS Paint, man. he just told me the rudimentals, you know. He showed me how to use the primitives. He showed me how to use lines and all those kind of things. I was like, okay, cool, no problem. Then I just started like making houses and like trying to draw people. Imagine how trying to draw a person with a mouse, right?
I had my MS Paint, paints.
Good. It was painful, yeah, but for me then it was quite fulfilling. I felt I was learning something, and I picked up some interesting stuff. So right after school, I went to stay with my uncle for a bit. He's late now, but you know, really, really good guy. He enrolled me into a computer school, and in that school, they wanted to teach me, you know, the basics of computer. I was like, nah, screw that. Look, I'm well above and beyond that nonsense. Teach me the meat, man. Teach me the good stuff. So I left that class. Each time I was holding class, I left the class and I was going to sit in the Corel Draw class. And I had, I was teaching myself Corel Draw and QBasic at the time when QBasic was still a thing. And John is say big here. He's at Booking right now, but I think that was the first time we met, and he pretty much put me through Corel Draw. Yeah. He put me through Corel Draw. And then I just, you know, I just started getting creative with it. I think that was Corel 6 or Corel 7, I believe. Yeah. I think that was Corel 6 or Corel 7, Cha. One of the, was it Corel 5? I can't remember, honestly. Anyways, so right after that, I go into Uniben. and then I had no systems. There were no laptops back then.
Yeah.
And internet access wasn't as prevalent as it is right now. So it's either you're using dial-up or, yeah, pretty much dial-up actually. So it's either you're using dial-up or you're using like this cabled satellites version. So I was always going to cyber cafes. I would go there like with a bunch of floppy disks because I couldn't afford to get a flash drive. Imagine like having to pay like 10,000 naira for 128 megabytes.
I met floppy disks.
You know, flash drives are like, you know, cheap now, but
yeah,
back then it was small, but you had it, you could stunt like Jesus. You were like gold, you know. So I was going to cyber cafes, and I had friends who were in computer science who were also very, very keen on like, you know, developing themselves and excelling beyond the Nigerian academic framework, because back then they were still teaching them Pascal and Ada and QBasic, and then like nobody was using that in the real world, you know. So my friends and I, we learned Visual Basic, and then we started building out apps in Visual Basic. I taught myself HTML and CSS. It was pretty easy back then. Well, it was relatively easier back then for me. I taught myself how to do web design. I was designing web pages and stuff. You know, I mean, they were amateurish, but it was still something. And I learned how to, like, I started learning how to design logos and letterheads and stuff like that. And I think after I got to a point where I felt confident, and which, you know, looking back, it wasn't really that great, but I just felt confident that I could start marketing my services. I was in 200 level when I got my first logo design gig for the grand awesome price of 600 naira.
Are you serious? And
it was 600 naira, yeah. And God. And the guy I did it for just looked at it and just trashed it, or like, you know, this is rubbish, this bullshit, blah, 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 blah. And I felt down, but I learned a few things during that brief interaction. Number one, like, you have to speak up for yourself. No one's going to speak up for you. And the client is, like, the client first and foremost is looking for how to save money. And if he can get you to do his work for free, he will. He doesn't really care much for your well-being. He cares more for the execution of his project than for your general well-being. How you survive beyond that is between you and your maker. So I learned. Consequently, I think I started getting better at pricing, and I saved up just about enough money to get myself a desktop in school. And my dad got me a desktop as well. That was later, a more powerful desktop. That was later. And I just kept at it. But while I was in UniBen, I was leveling up in design and getting more knowledge and getting more skillful, my academics suffered. I stopped going to classes. I had this thing where I tried to switch from, because I was studying pure and abstract math back then. So I wanted to switch from math to computer science, and that didn't work out. And I just lost hope, you know, I just lost hope. So I stopped going to classes. I was just photocopying my friend's lecture notes and then reading them. So it got to
about, like, exams.
Yeah, for exams. And then I coasted through first and second year. Third year, that was when the real tests were, you know. And you know how Nigerian academic system is now. It's just, oh God. It's hard for no reason, you know. It's hard for no reason. It just is. It's hard for no reason. Education is not supposed to be, I'm not saying education is supposed to be like 1+1, you know, but you should see education as an adventure, you know, as an adventure, a calling to know more, a calling to betterment, and a calling to improvement, not a calling to look at the book and cram and pour and hope to God that the lecturer manages to, you know, he's feeling good enough to give you a C, you know. So third year was bad. I had to repeat. I repeated my third year in UniBen, and when I did that, the situation didn't even improve, it just got worse. So when I repeated, I failed again. So my course advisor just called me one day, showed me my results, and was like, look, son, instead of you figure out a way to transfer to a lower level, come into a lower course or you withdraw. And I tried transferring to a lower course, but that didn't work out so much. In fact, the lecturer that was supposed to help me, and what I saw that time, I don't think it's something that I should talk about on this podcast. Anyways, moving on. So I dropped out, and my mom, God, I love that woman, man. Like she didn't fall to pieces. She didn't say, oh, why me? She didn't devolve into that typical Nigerian behavior of blame, you know, shaming me and blaming me everywhere. She was like, you know, what happened? What was the problem? How do we fix this? You know, and then after like a month, she got me a lesson teacher, enrolled me for JAMB. You know, I wrote JAMB. I was supposed to go to Unilag. My uncle stepped in and said, look, I can push you through Covenant. Do you want? My first reaction was, Covenant? You do realize the amount. And then his wife just sprung up and was like, is it your money? I was like, no, man. I was just concerned for, you know, your financial. We're like, don't complain. I'm not complaining. So I wrote the entrance. I got into Covenant. So imagine coming from an environment where, like, having a laptop is elitist, is a big deal, to entering an environment where laptops are commonplace. So there was this huge shock, like very serious shock. Okay, so what then happened? I managed to get a laptop. My mom helped me get a laptop. It was a low-end laptop, HP 530. Beast of a laptop back then. Had one of the strongest boards in the market. 1 gig RAM. And Pentium 4. Yeah, Pentium 4. And I punished that laptop, Jesus. It did everything for me. It ran After Effects, it ran Photoshop, it ran Illustrator, it ran Premiere Pro, it ran PES 6. It ran PES 6, man. So, you know, so I think my Covenant days were more my formative days, because I got the chance to link up with a bunch of guys who were also like intent on developing themselves and growing themselves. And then that way we just kept on learning and learning and getting better and getting better. And I started to make a name for myself in Covenant. So there was this thing I did where, I mean, you still remember Flash, right?
Yeah.
Adobe Flash.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back then, before Adobe acquired them, they were known as Macromedia Flash. So I learned Flash, then I learned how to make it like an animated portfolio in Flash.
Yeah.
And the beautiful thing is that Flash allows you to export to either EXE or to Mac as a standalone executable. So anyone can run it, you know, standalone like an app on their systems.
Yeah.
So what I was
whether PC or yeah.
Exactly. So what I was then doing was I was taking my executable file and then dropping it in people's public folders, because everyone was connected to the same network. Yeah. And so I was just dropping it in people's public folders, and that was how I got popular. Because people will find it in their public folder and like, hey, what is this file? And they will double click it and they will say, oh my God, this is amazing. This is mad. This is this. Ah. Anyways, fast forward. At the end of my first year, I got a contract gig at Softcom. It was at first was an internship, then it evolved to a contract gig. And then I think my Softcom years were also quite, you know, formative. That was when my skills encountered like real world applications, because it wasn't just about, you know, creating one page screens. You now have to think about the whole design. You have to think about the bigger picture, you know. That was when I encountered business practices and, you know, and the effect of design on, you know, in business. And I worked on a bunch of projects, you know, did some work for MTN, did some work for government. I was exposed to a lot of things. And all this was just, you know, up until my 300 level IT. Yeah, then I managed to graduate from Covenant. And then just after I graduated, I went back into Softcom, I stayed like a year plus with Softcom. And I tried to run my own practice with me and my friend Deji Fashola. Tried to run our own practice, but that didn't work out. The reason why it didn't work out wasn't because there were no customers. We had customers. We were making money. In fact, in 10 months, we had made close to like 8 million naira. The problem was the third partner who we had, at that time was cheating us.
Things of business.
She understand. And it's we were making money, we just weren't seeing it. You know, turns out that, you know, he would go cut deals outside, come back and tell us like one third or quarter of the price you get. Then we would execute the deals. Yeah. The client will pay. He'll keep the balance, bring the quarter and then still take his cut from that quarter. You dig? So, man, it was crazy. So we found out and then we started putting all the monies that we could have made that would have come to us. It was just too much, man. Luckily, we had like one final gig with Old Mutual. So we executed on that. And then after that, my partner had to travel to the US to further his education. He went to go and do a master's. And that was how the company we just froze the company. We didn't let it. In my mind, I don't think that company is dead. ND Interactive is not dead. It's just frozen in time. And as to whether or not a time will come where, you know, we will
pick it up again,
I do not know. But the vision for that company was we wanted to be the only two-lettered company that you would ever remember when it comes to like really superior design or really superior forms of creativity. You get it was just that was the mantra, ND, ND, ND. And ND really, what ND stands for is like, you know, nerdy dreamy, but because nerdy dreamy is not something you tell people and then take you seriously. So we just like crammed it up to ND. And man, like I've just been hit by this really big wave of nostalgia. So after ND, I stayed at home for like a year. Then I went to Syracuse to do some work at Syracuse Digital. They're still in Ikeja then. The CEO recently I think it was awarded Forbes 40 over 40. I mean, 40 under 40. No, 40, yeah, 30 under 30. Some years back. Pretty dope guy. We did some really interesting stuff with techno. You know, we did some interesting stuff with techno and some other like fantastic brands. Then after that, bought it to InterSwitch. And that was when, I think it was InterSwitch that really, really cemented my product design life, so to speak, because there were only two of us. There were only three of us at the time. That's me, Francis Otogbaye, and Joseph Benson Aruna. Joseph recently got hired. I can't remember the name of the company, but Joseph was a design guy. But I mean, I'm not bragging, but he wasn't as good as I was. But Joseph was more of a UX than a UI guy. Joseph had this keen understanding of how business worked and how people actually work. And he was always asking like really, really key questions. Joseph was a big picture kind of person. Francis and I were like, man, look, design, man. Push those pixels. And Francis wasn't just design, because before Francis came to InterSwitch, he was also running the business as well. But what casted his business was, you know, the fluctuating dollar rates at the time. So he had to get a job, because the business couldn't take the hits anymore. So he came to InterSwitch. And so we were working, the three of us, we sat down and worked together on almost everything InterSwitch that you guys are looking at right now. Quickseller, that was me, Joseph, and part of Francis. WebPay, me, Joseph. The Quickseller app, Francis started it. Well, we pretty much left at the same time. So he did it to his considerable points. Then whoever it is that came and took over, it just, you know,
finished up
and stuff like that. But we did a lot of work. Just three people and we were managing like 70 products. And God almighty, it was fun times. That was the first time that we sat down and we created our design system. And I think it's still in use till today. Call it Switch Strap.
What did you call it?
Switch Strap. It was a play on, because what we wanted to do was we just wanted to like cannibalize Bootstrap until, you know, it worked for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we ended up calling it Switch Strap. And it helped speed up development, you know, because now developers didn't need to always consult designers. We already created design patterns for them. So all they just needed to do was just follow those patterns, and that was it. You know, so we succeeded in cutting work for ourselves. Well, after a while, you know, we wanted more pay, and then the switch didn't want to give us more pay, after all the negotiation, I'm plenty gist now. Say, you know what, we're not doing anymore. And they tried to convince us. They even like boosted our salary, but the salary boost was like, you know, 30K. I'm like, what? you can't be stressing me full time. You can't be giving me full time stress and giving me contract staff pay, because we were hired as contract staff, you know.
Wow.
Yeah. We had a contract staff. So by that time Joe had left to team out. So one day I got a call from Joe. Joe was like, yo, Alpha, come team up now. I was like, oh, more man. At that point, I couldn't even do young guy again. So I just went team out. And I sat down with our boss, Tosin, and they had just moved into this new building. So everything was all minty and fresh. And it wasn't so much of an interview. It was more of a, come and start working. How much do you want? Okay, this is what I'm going to give you. It is mouth, it's leaps and bounds better than what you're getting at interview. Just come. And that was it. That was
Did you enter TeamApt as a creative director?
Oh, no. I came in as a UI UX guy. I came in as a UI UX guy, but before I could get to the point of creative director, it was a long journey. I had a lot to prove, and I had a lot of trust to earn, you know, because in as much as Tosin is a great guy, he's not really that, like, you have to prove to him that you are capable of you are a capable hand before you and trust your decisions, you know. And I spent months trying to prove that I was capable, and then Jesus, we were at loggerheads. We fought. There were months where we never even talked to each other, you know. But you know, Tosin is a really good guy, and he's, I think if I'm at the point where I am right now creatively, I think it's as a result of the things I've had to do while at Team Out, the deadline, the things I've had to do while under pressure, the way I've had to push myself, you know, to be better, to learn new things while at Team Out. So yeah. So one morning I was just, you know, I just came for my morning tea, and then HR called me. I was like, oh shit, what have I done? So he just sat me down. I was like, okay, so we are promoting you to the role of creative director. I was like, whoa, come on, bro. Stop messing with me. I like, okay, so, you know, I'm now the creative director. What are my responsibilities? These are my responsibilities, right? No problem. Oh, yeah, and it comes with a boost. What? For real? Shit! You're like, this is my salary. Yes, yeah! It was good. It felt good. And, you know, like, Team Apps, I think Team Apps is, like, the longest I've been at a company. Yeah, I just crossed my third year in August, so I want to see if I can go as far as like 5 years to see how far I can go in like five years. But it's been an interesting journey, and everything I just told you is just like the summary of it.
No, but I think it's an amazing journey. Like you've bounced from paint designer to mathematics. To computer science.
Yeah.
To computer science, to logo designer at 600 Naira, to founder, and then to creative director. So yes, so it's I think that's something that's common with a lot of people, because speaking specifically about UX design now, most people a higher proportion, especially in somewhere like Nigeria, they stumbled into the field. So it wasn't like they knew that I want to be a product designer.
Yeah, most of us stumbled into the field either out of curiosity or out of hunger. In my case, it was more of curiosity. Like design for me was never about, you know, money. Mm. You know, design for me was more about expressing myself, you know. Because when I was younger, I wasn't really I couldn't really express myself because of the framework in which I found myself, the family framework in which I found myself in. I had a stepdad, and I was surrounded by step siblings that were total nightmares, every single one of them. Total nightmares. So I couldn't, it took a while for me to really come out, to become my own person. But but design was that vehicle that I could use to like get my voice out.
I think my question would be, and I think it ties to all these things that you have mentioned. Because one thing I noticed throughout your journey was your first interaction with MS Paint was you walking up to a neighbor to ask him to teach you. You mentioned the guy at Booking who was the one that put you through. I think you mentioned CorelDRAW. So all along I've seen like that there has been that interaction for you. So my question is, was that what inspired you to teach? What made you want to teach design?
That's a question that has multiple answers. Okay, for number one, my mom is a teacher, so teaching is kind of there. It's always there. That's number one. Number two, I wouldn't say. Well, no, let me not say that. I think that would be inaccurate if I said. What I wanted to say was that, you know, me wanting to teach wasn't really inspired by me walking up to people to teach me. That's wrong, actually. That's inaccurate. What I mean to say is, during my time, I mean, I had people who basically showed me the ropes, yeah? But for the most part, in fact, for 90% of the part, it was just me on my own figuring stuff out, yeah? And I taught myself, beyond CorelDRAW, I taught myself Photoshop, Illustrator, Flash. Taught myself, like, literally the Adobe suite. Taught myself 3D. I'm not really that excellent at it. It's just primarily because I haven't, like, committed to it. But I know my way around it. Taught myself a little bit of coding. I don't code, but, you know, like I said, I know my way around it. It's for me, it was just that drive to learn things that would make me better and would make me relevant, that would make me express my ideas more. But that's on the side. I think there's this joy I derive from teaching, because when you teach, you help. It's like you're literally helping someone's reality.
Yeah.
You know, when you teach, you're not just, you know, sharing ideas, you're also receiving ideas as well. You know, and especially when it's something that, you know, you enjoy doing. And another thing is, I noticed that, I mean, like, I didn't have mentors when I was coming up. You know, I didn't have mentors. And there are a lot of people out there who want to design, yeah, who want to be creative, but they don't have anyone to look up to. They don't have anyone who, like, show them the ropes, that will be there to answer their questions, that will be there to push them to be better. I didn't have that, but that doesn't mean they shouldn't have that too. So I just felt that, you know, I could be that person who could help them. I could be that person. Saying that kind of smacks of, you know, savior mentality, yeah, but I am genuinely doing from a place of goodness. I just want to be able to help people to realize their ideas and to realize the best versions of themselves and live fulfilling lives. That's it.
It's not cheesy. It's completely relatable, like trying to put in stuff that you didn't meet. And I know you have taught at, I know you taught at UX the class. So that is Zoje's.
Yeah, Zoje's.
Yeah. Yes. So you taught at UX the class. You taught at teaching at 2:10. So, like, how long would you say you have taught design professionally for?
Professionally, I'd say 2 years, I believe. Because Zoje's class was like 2 years ago, I believe. Yeah. No, was it? No, Zoji's class was last year.
Yeah, Zoji's class was last year.
Zoji's class was last year. And I picked up 2:10 in November, December. You get it. And I've taken like two cohorts. already as 210, and I was able to like take a third one, but I needed a break and I needed to do overlay. So yeah, let's just like a year and a half.
So but I'm sure like that across this time and even managing your community, because you founded a community, yeah?
Yeah.
Design what made Jobcaster. What made you start Design Jobcaster?
Okay, so Design Jobcaster was born out of something rather silly. And I'll tell you.
Okay.
Don't laugh. Now, while I was at InterSwitch, yeah, there was something peculiar about Jobberman and people posting design jobs about at Jobberman. Yeah. Companies tended to like hype themselves, you know, and like really, really hype themselves. And so it was around that era where everyone wanted to position themselves as that hip company. I think that was when Facebook videos about company culture and people culture and Gen Z and
were coming out.
You understand? So it was no longer a thing to come to work wearing a tie and suit. Companies were trying to focus on, you know. Or at least they were paying lip service to employee well-being. So they figured out that if we are going to get the best talents aren't the people that have the best degrees, so to speak. You know, the best talents are the people that wear the best suits or tie or not the best ties. You know, the best talents are, you know, the rascals, the misfits, and they wanted to reach out to them. But in the process of trying to reach out to them, when they post jobs online, they just put like this long write up, and it's so self.
Yeah, glorifying.
God, I don't want to read all of this. I just want to apply, you know, and hope to God that you call me. You get so I decided okay. And it was Joe that even pushed me, I decided, maybe I should put together some kind of platform whereby, it's a job board for designers only, and you come, you apply for design jobs, you just see the essentials, the things you need to know. This is the company, yeah. This is what we do, this is what we're looking for, and maybe this is our salary. Finish. No lengthy paragraphs about how awesome we are. No. You can do that on your website, not on our platform. So that was what gave birth to Design Jobcaster. Now, as for the community started like about a year or 2 years later, and I wanted to do it on WhatsApp, but I didn't like the fact that WhatsApp was like, how many people could fit into WhatsApp as at that time?
I think 250.
No, haven't always been 250. No,
it's increased since then. I can't remember, but I knew it was around 150.
Yeah, it was 150 at the time. I was like, no, look, what if 200 people actually enter this platform? Do I have to now start creating like multiple WhatsApp groups like Design Jobcaster 1, Design Jobcaster 2, Design Jobcaster 3? So I came across Telegram, and then the first thing I saw about Telegram is that you can get up to like 100,000. 100,000 people, sign me up. You get it? So, you know, the first year, I think we managed to max out about 100, 150 people. Yeah, wow. And it was a small community, you know, we're just talking and just making noise, and I was posting jobs, and then people just started coming organically and coming, and then where it now hit was, okay, I checked one day and we were like 700. I was like, whoa, what's going on? 700, I might be onto something here. So that was when I decided to take, you know, the community a lot seriously, and then start planning things around it. And I mean, you'll notice that we don't really advertise much, or we don't even advertise at all. It's all word of mouth and social media, because we want people who want to learn, and we want established hands to come on our platform and be part of our community, and have like a ready pool of people who are consistently developing themselves, interacting, looking for job opportunities, connected to job, to career opportunities, and collaborating as well. So that's the general idea behind Design Jobcaster.
Yeah, and you mentioned it has grown, because I am on Design Jobcaster.
Yeah.
And it has grown beyond just a job casting platform. It's now like a full design community where they are interacting and
meeting
people that they are working with, and it's a real big family.
It is.
You mentioned something right now about like having people that are established hands and then having people that want to learn. And so I know that that is something that you would come across a lot, like people that are just starting out, both in your teaching
and
in the community.
Yeah.
What would you say are the most common misconceptions about learning UX design?
Common misconceptions about learning UX design. Well, I think the biggest misconception is that you can learn UX design in 3 months. You actually can't. You can.
That's a big one.
No, okay, so now, first of all, that's actually self-contradictory, being that I have a course that is about people, about, you know, designing from ground up in 2 months. But I try my best to make it clear in my course that, I mean, I'm basically just going to set you on the road.
Mm.
You know, you have to make the journey yourself. I'm just going to point you in the right direction. And people just think that, okay, you can learn it, and then from there, no, you can't. Even me, that I'm still, you know, I've been in the game for like a while now, a suitable amount of time, I'm still learning, because new things come up, old things get updated, and you have to always be in the loop. That's number one. Number two, I think another misconception is that, you know, once you have the tool, then, you know, awesome designs will churn out. No. UX design is more reading than actual design.
Very true.
It's more reading, it's more studying, it's more
Excel sheet.
No, not necessarily Excel sheet, actually, but it's more interacting. You are expected to spend more time off your computer than on it.
Yeah.
You know, so let's just say maybe like the ratio will be like 60-40, 70-30. That kind of thing. So like 60% of the time you're talking to people, trying to understand their needs, trying to understand them, probably even like looking for inspiration in nature or even outside, trying to study processes and trying to optimize those processes, then getting back to your laptop and then documenting your thoughts before you can say, okay, let me start the actual design proper.
Mm.
So that, I think those are the two common misconceptions I have encountered.
Yeah, and I think those two are like major misconceptions.
Because
the reason is because there's so much information overload about UX right now.
Yes. The thing now is there's so much misconception. That's number one. Number two, there are so many opinion pieces that masquerade themselves as facts. So many opinion pieces that masquerade themselves as facts. I'm not saying that there aren't people that actually do actual UX work and come out with research, you know, but someone can read like a bunch of articles and then mash them all together and then come up with a new article and put it online and then hype it and have a lot of people read it. Then before you know, he puts himself out there as a UX person and he's answering questions and giving opinions on what UX should be. And you're not really helping the community that way. You know, sometimes they even do like a lot more damage to the industry than good, because a good number of them don't necessarily even have like a proper design background. Some of them are just pixel pushers, you know, pixel pushers that know how to write. Some of them just like the sound of their voices.
But you know, the thing is that everyone that is coming, so for example, every student that comes to Stuten or came to UX the class, ask the question in Design Jobcaster has been exposed to this information.
Yes.
So my question is, where do you start with your students? If you're taking them on a UX class, where do you start?
I usually like to start with the theory of it.
Mm.
You know, why are you doing this? Why are we designing? because we're not designing for beauty alone. We're not designing so we can post our shit on Dribbble or Behance. Mm. We design to solve problems. So what is the why? You know, we need to find out why first. Why are we doing this? Then how do we identify problems? You know, then how do we approach solving these problems? Not all problems have like 100%, you know, direct solutions. Sometimes you have to experiment. Sometimes you have to be willing to be wrong.
Yeah.
That's what we need to be wrong, you know, because even if you adhere to all the, you take all the steps, you take all the, you get all the data points, you do your interviews, you do all the wireframing. At the end of the day, you come up with a product, and then there is very little traction and nobody's using it. Then I start wondering, what did we miss? We followed all the steps. What happened? So, like I said, you have to be willing to be wrong. So I like to teach them the theory of it first. Then I like to pass them through the fundamentals of design, not just product design, but visual design. Because in as much as you're trying to solve problems, you also have to make your solutions look good.
Yeah, aesthetics is important.
Yeah, aesthetics is just as important. You know, there was a time when people were downplaying aesthetics. You know, it has to be functional first. It has to be functional first. Agreed. But form has to follow function, or function has to follow form. But they have to follow each other. You can't just say, oh, let it work. As long as it's working, it's fine. No, don't. Users care about what they are interacting with. They care that it's neat. They care that it's pretty. They care that it's minimal. They care about that, those small animations, those little micro interactions that you insert. You understand? Now, back then, people were making the Naraland argument that Naraland is ugly, but a lot of people are using it. No. A lot of people are using Naraland because there is no alternative. There has been nobody that has come to crack the code, that has come to crack the Naraland code. And someone might, they probably just have to do like a lot more thinking and probably like crank out some incentives, but someone might, just like they disrupted fintech and bank, you know, just like fintech disrupted banking, you know, and just like Slack sat down and, you know, disrupted emails, although, I mean, emails are still relevant, but Slack just took most of the formalities away and brought the workspace a lot closer. I'm just waiting for that person that will actually sit down and disrupt Naraland, and I hope that they do it soon so that we can get that argument. But I usually like to teach them, you know, the theory of design and the bare fundamentals. Then it's that bare fundamentals that is then going to inform the rest of the journey, basically. Your choice of typography, your choice of colors, your how you arrange your layouts, and lots of principles that you can actually flex, not necessarily like adhere to, you know, word for word, but you can actually just bend a little bit to create the visuals or to create the output they are looking for. So yeah, that's how I like to teach them. I also noticed that,
but
as long as your foundation is solid, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I was saying that I noticed that you know, like when I was teaching people, when I was teaching at Stuten, yeah, I think it's kind of like I don't know what I'd call it, a formula. It's learning for these people is a lot more enjoyable when they see you as one of them.
Mm.
I mean, you are the master, yeah. I mean, you know all these things, but you shouldn't present yourself as a know-all-be-all. You shouldn't present yourself as, you know, I'm that bad guy. You try to, I don't want to say empathize with them, because I'm tired of the word empathy. Everybody throws it around, empathy. Yeah, it's supposed to be a given, yeah. But I think if you try to relate with them, and you try to actually establish real connections with the people you are teaching, they'll be more open to learning from you. So yeah, that's pretty much what I discovered, and it's an approach I've tried, and it's an approach that has worked with significant success.
I think that is like the perfect cue to talk about Ovalle. because I think it was last month that you made the big announcement that you were going to start your own design academy. So is that one of the things that informed that, and what is Overlay?
Overlay, I don't want to dive into the history of the name Overlay or how Overlay came about, but okay, I'll try to be quick. So Overlay, you know, in Photoshop there's a blend mode called Overlay, right? Good. That's literally where it came from. And the reason why it's like that is because, like, when we were learning Photoshop back then, the first trick, in fact, the only thing we ever wanted to do was to put two layers together and set one of them to overlay. Because it was always nice. It was always nice, yeah. So that was pretty much what informed me. But Overlay at its inception wasn't supposed to be a design school. It was supposed to be an awards, you know, program. And I'd already put everything together and set to launch, but midway, things just, I ran out of funds. You know, I couldn't really fund most of the things that we wanted to do. And I didn't want to start borrowing money and loaning money just to get this idea to work. So I just hung it in one corner. Then recently I've been getting like lots of requests, you know, people will say, okay, can I learn under you? Can you mentor me? Can you, you know, this, that, that. And lots of people have been pushing me to like share my knowledge and teach, you know, do webinars, do these things. Samson Aligba is one of those people that kicks me a lot. He kicks me a lot. And like, you know, he's a really, really good friend of mine. Great friend, actually. You know, we bounce ideas a lot. It kicks me a lot. We met virtually when Niger Graphic Designer was still a thing on Facebook. So, and then there was, believe it or not, there was a time I actually wanted to retire. This was like some 2 years ago. Like I got so bored with what I was doing that I wanted to retire and like focus on something. Then Shegun Ainana just bought me. I was like, man, don't you fucking dare. You know, don't you fucking dare. Because he said that you might not know it, but a lot of people see what you do. And you're the only designer in our industry that shares his process. Nobody does. Well, at least at that time. Like, you're the only designer who actually takes his time to share his design process. You know? And that is where people learn from. So don't you just fucking dare. Just stick with it, man. I was like, okay. You know? So, when a lot of people just kept on saying, you know, I want to learn, I was like, okay, fine. I need to do something about this. And that was how I was trying to look for like a really cool name. I was like, oh, I mean, I still have Overlay. And I checked Overlay.com and I discovered that Overlay.com was finally available. And I was like, yes!
The domain.
Like, I tweeted around that time that, you know, the beginning of every good idea starts with a domain.
Yes.
You know, so as soon as I got the domain name, you know, the ginger just came up, saying, bam, all right, let's get this party started. Let's do something profitable. And then I started planning it out. I put together the syllabus, I put together the website. I mean, I have this broadcast list on my WhatsApp. So I asked everyone for their emails, and they sent it to me. And I sent them all of them an email, highlighting what I wanted to do. And, you know, people were like, you know, good idea. But I knew that I needed to do a kick-ass website to really sell this thing. And then after like a week of not sleeping on Webflow, boom, put out the website, everyone subscribed. You know, people now started asking questions. People were now interested. There was a lot of like interest in it. And it pretty much took off from there. So what I want for Overlay is my end vision is this. I want Overlay to be, I don't want to say the premier design academy in Nigeria. I don't want to say the best design academy in Nigeria, because I don't know, but I think there's some design schools in Nigeria. Orange, for example. Mm. I tried to apply at Orange a couple of times, but yeah, I didn't have the money.
VFX?
No, I can't remember what I wanted to apply for, you know, but I tried a couple of times and I just didn't have the money to even like afford it back then. Mm. Orange was like, you know, design school for elitists. it was design school for elitists. So I was like, you know what, let me just free that. But I want a situation, I want a certificate from Overlay to mean something. Mm. I want a certificate from that if you put that you're a graduate of Overlay or you've taken an Overlay course in your CV, it will be like a stamp from Jesus Christ himself. You get, that's what I want. And I am committed to making that idea come to life. I am 100% committed to making that idea come to life. I want, it's not just about, you know, I mean, yeah, definitely I'm going to make some money out of this, yeah. But it's not just about that. It's about empowering people to live their best lives. That is it. That is it for me. Empowering people to live their best. That's the core. Empowering people to live their best lives. And now what does that mean? If as a creative, you have access to knowledge that will advance you in your career, and by advancing your career will earn you more money. One of the mantras the company I work for, TeamApt, is financial happiness. And it was like, I will never forget the pitch that Tosin told me. He was like, look, everybody wants money. Money makes everyone happy. You might say it's not about the money, but at the end of the day, if you have money in your pocket, you have enough mouths you have enough mouths to say it's not about the money. But in reality, it's about money. Money makes everyone happy. You get. So if as a creative, I have access to knowledge that will make me more money in the future, I'll allow me to afford the things that I want. And that will allow me to afford the pursuits that I want. That will let me live a more fulfilling life. Not necessarily the best life out there. I mean, I'm not saying that you will learn design and you become Dangote. But a more fulfilling life. I mean, you've done something. You've improved that person's life, right?
Yeah.
You've given that person the chance to not fall, to the lowest bottom of the pyramid where he has to resort to other less, you know, savory means of survival. Mm. You've impacted reality in a very significant way. So that's why I'm wholeheartedly committed to that dream, empowering designers so they can live their best lives.
I think that is amazing. I know Overlay launches on Saturday, yeah?
Yes.
I'm asking in advance, mm-hmm, when the next cohort is going to be.
Oh yeah, so the next cohort will probably be in So here's the thing. We've got like a bunch of things that we are planning in the background. I can't really share some of it. We're looking at launching the next cohort. If we don't launch in mid-January, we'll launch in February. Mm. If we don't launch in mid-January, we'll launch in February. But of course, we would have to do like lots of like marketing and stuff like that. But
yeah.
Look, I think February, it makes more sense to actually launch in February.
It sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, and then I'm bringing back awards.
Ushi.
Awards is going to be, you know, we're bringing out back awards next year. I'm looking at it happening, say October, November next year. But we'll start making noise about it, you know, quite early, so people can start like preparing themselves and like, you know, prepare to actually put out quality work.
Yeah, that sounds good. Like I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to these plans because I know it's going to be fire.
It will be fire.
I think we've spoken about a lot, spoken about starting out, spoken about Overly, spoken about like where to begin in UX and what that journey has been for you.
Yeah.
Spoken about funny names. And I'm so grateful for you coming on the call. I think my final question, which is a major question, is how you came about the name Commissioner of Good Design.
Oh no, please look, that's easy. Jesus. You know that there was this was it sometime or some years ago? I feel like 2 years ago or last year, I can't remember. I think was it Anambra or the Abia State governor hired a woman and gave her the portfolio of Commissioner of Happiness,
marriage
happiness, yeah, and welfare, marriage
happiness, welfare, and marriage fulfillment.
That something along that lines. And you know, and that was just a parody of it. Yeah, it was just a parody of it. You know, like, you know, Commissioner of Good Design. And then David Ukawa, yeah,
yeah, Commissioner. He's also commissioner.
So like we've been bantering about, you know, who's the actual commissioner? Who's the actual commissioner? Well, no, dude. Dave is a really, really great, solid guy, you know, and he's one of the few people that I have like immense respect for, and he's done pretty well for himself. He's done pretty impressively well for himself.
So both of you can be commissioners.
Well, I mean, he's commissioner of overall design. I'm just interested in good design. So yeah.
I mean, Leslie, I'm so grateful for you coming on this.
Ah, man, look,
amazing.
It's an honor. No, I think the pleasure is mine. I am happy to have to talk about my journey and how I got here and where I want to go. It's been long. It's been a long journey. It's been a hard journey. I've shed blood. I've shed tears. I've lost friends. I've had lots of disappointments. I've disappointed my own fair share of people, you know. And I think looking at everything that has happened so far, I can't help but be filled with a sense of gratitude because I could have missed it at any single point, you know. I could have missed it at any single point. But the fact that I'm here and I'm doing this, it warrants gratitude. It warrants gratitude. I don't take what I do for granted. I don't take the people who have placed their belief and their faith in me for granted. I don't take the people who have invested in me for granted. I value them. Even the people that look up to me, even the people that say, "Oh, okay, you know, I respect you, I mentor you," like take praise Philemon, for example.
Yeah,
like I said recently, that praise
is a genius.
No, he's not just a genius; he's a fucking genius. Like there are debts to that young man that I don't know. Like I wish I had when I was his age. You know, there are depths to him that I wish I actually had. And I said it on Twitter and I'm saying it on air. Praise is the future of Nigerian design. And if you don't know praise now, better start. That boy is the future of design. And like, he doesn't, I don't know. I don't think he fully appreciates or knows how deeply I respect him. You know, that's just one example, you know. I also have like really good friends that have been there for me, that check on me and make sure I'm actually okay. And haven't been there when I struggle. Bada is a good example. Samson is a good example. Shegs is a good example. Yorks is a good example. Charles, you know. I'm just filled with gratitude. Because I could have missed it at any point in time. I could have missed it at any point in time. But yeah, that's it. That's it for me.